It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The seat's still hot when Judge Kavanaugh sat here for more than 12 hours and faced questions from all 21 senators, the top Democrat, Dianne Feinstein, on this committee, pressing about the future of Roe v. Wade.
I thought about it, that practice, and I will be the first to say I'm not the second Justice Harlan, and not trying to compare myself in any way to him, but I thought that was a good model for a federal judge just to underscore the independence, because we're not supposed to participate in political activities. Go to rallies, give money, and that kind of thing. And it seemed to me that voting is a very personal expression of your policy beliefs
so then,
in many ways.
Of the Supreme Court. By it, I mean Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey.
Been reaffirmed many times. Casey is precedent on precedent, which itself is an important factor.
Feinstein also asked whether or not a sitting president could be subpoenaed. And, of course, Judge Kavanaugh said, sorry, Senator, can't give you an answer. That's hypothetical. On the issue of judicial independence, here's what Judge Kavanaugh had to say.
I have repeatedly called U.S. v. Nixon one of the four greatest moments in Supreme Court history. It was one of the greatest moments because of the political pressures of the time. The court stood up for judicial independence in a moment of national crisis.
And finally, of course, in the back, there's 23 seats reserved for the public. There were 73 protesters arrested and cited for disorderly conduct yesterday, bringing the total to 143. Guys, we're getting another long day today. Each senator will get 30 minutes again to question Judge Kavanaugh right here in this seat.
All right, that was Griff Jenkins this morning on Fox and Friends. I don't know if you saw any of that Brett Kavanaugh hearing yesterday, but we really got to hear from him. And I am so impressed with him, I can't tell you. He is absolutely unflappable. He's humble. He's smart. He knows the law in just incredible ways. I'm not sure who could. It's not like he's trying to trick anyone either. He just understands the law. And so they can't throw him. His personal life is delightful. He loves his family. He does things like, you know, coaches girls in baseball, and it's pretty amazing. I'm not declaring he's going to be. I don't know that he'll always adjudicate the way I would like for him to. Most judges wouldn't, 100%. But I think we have a good candidate here, and I just encourage you to tune in and watch at least a little bit of it, because you know, once they go on the court, you never see them again. At least not personally. They kind of go underground a little bit, because they have to. So anyway, that's what's happening. A lot more is happening, and we'll talk about that later. But I'm coming to you live from Phoenix Park Hotel in downtown D.C. And this is Hold Their Feet to the Fire. This is the 12th annual Radio Row, which I've been here all 12 years. And that's why you hear all this this noise. We've got hosts all around us from all around the country, and they're interviewing people as I'm interviewing people. And so it's kind of fun. I enjoy it, but of course we're here for a very serious purpose. When we talk about illegal immigration, which I talk about a lot, I think one of the most damning aspects of it is the out-of-control illegal alien crime that no one seems to want to talk about or prosecute. And just to get us started, there was a clip that some of the angel moms who have lost their kids made recently when Molly Tibbetts was killed by an illegal immigrant. I want you to hear it. Then I want to introduce you to another angel mom. Let's listen.
We were permanently separated, not just for a week or a month.
I was at home when I got the phone call from the hospital.
He was hit head-on by a repeat illegal alien criminal.
Known gang member came in the back and he fired the gun and struck my son in the arm.
Trying to get away, he drove over my son's body. He backed up, driving over him a second time.
Rear end is estimated 62 miles an hour.
He strangled him and let him go to see if he was breathing. Strangled him over and over and over until death.
And he dragged Matthew a quarter of a mile to his death.
He rear-ended her,
killing her. He went to a field and put Josh out in the gasoline one and lit him on fire.
Previously deported about a year and a half to 2 years before.
This man wasn't supposed to be here.
My separation is
permanent.
Our separation is permanent.
Back with you. If that doesn't move you, then you have no feeling. Those of us that have children, grandchildren, our hearts just break with these families who have lost their children for no good reason. No good reason. Michelle Root is sitting with me. She is part of Angel Families. She lost her daughter, Sarah Root, at the hands of an illegal alien. We're going to talk about that. But first of all, welcome, Michelle.
Thank you for having me.
This is fresh for you.
It is.
I mean, this is really fresh. It happened in 2016.
Correct.
Yeah. And, I'm going to have trouble talking to you because I'm going to feel it, at least in part, with you. But your daughter's name was Sarah, and she, first of all, tell me about your family. Can you say where you're from?
Yes, I'm from Modell, Iowa, but I moved there after my ex-husband and I divorced originally. From Council Bluffs, where my kids grew up.
Is Council Bluffs in Iowa then?
Yes, it is. It's across the river from Omaha, Nebraska.
Okay, this is a real personal question, and I apologize, I'm not probing. I just, I will make this remark, because I'm the mother of a severely disabled child, and I know the stats about how it affects families. I experienced it myself. I think 90-something percent of parents with disabled children divorce, and I think the percentage is pretty high for people that lose children, too, isn't it?
We were divorced, actually, prior to Sarah's death, and it actually helped us communicate a lot better. We've always been there for our children, even after our divorce. However, this brought us closer together to put our pettiness aside for the sake of our children.
Petty. Talk about no time for pettiness.
Exactly.
Michelle, see, you're wearing this button with Sarah. She's beautiful. She's really a beautiful girl. So tell us about her. You guys, then you're a single mom with Sarah and other...
My son, Scott, who is older than Sarah.
Okay, so tell us about Sarah, beautiful Sarah.
Her beauty on the outside is just as beautiful on the inside. She was such a caring, giving, lovable person. Her smile lit up a room.
I can see that. Know? I mean, that's not exact. I mean, every mother might say that, but I can say from looking at the picture, you're not exaggerating.
That was the one thing everybody noticed was Sarah's smile, always.
And she's holding a cat. She's an animal lover?
Her kitty, Frisky, and she loved him. And he passed away the year after Sarah did.
Oh, interesting. And she was in college?
Correct.
What was she studying?
Criminal investigations.
Oh, my goodness,
she
really?
She just graduated the day before on January 30th, 16, with a 4.0 in criminal investigations.
And the whole family came to the graduation?
Yeah. You know, you hate to be thankful for anything because she's still gone, but I'm thankful we had that moment with her. All of us to be together and take those last pictures, and you don't realize that you're going to lose her in less than 24 hours.
So the hard part, what happened 24 hours later?
My son, actually, because she had lived with her brother after my ex-husband and I divorced in the house they grew up in, and they didn't want to sell the house, so my son bought the house from his dad and I. My son called me at 4:12 in the morning and said, Mom, you need to come quick. Sarah's been in an accident. So here's my 24-year-old son at the time having to make that phone call to his father and myself to let us know. And then we get up to the hospital and we're whisked up to like this conference room, and the trauma surgeon and neurosurgeon come in and they said, you know, sorry to tell you, there's a 0% chance of survival. I called them liars, and I said I wanted a second opinion because all I knew at this time was she was rear-ended in Omaha, Nebraska, on 33rd and L, which is a 35-mile-an-hour zone. So I can't imagine how she's dead. So I'm thinking, oh, my God, she wasn't wearing her seatbelt. My daughter always wore her seatbelt. the only way I could fathom all these injuries they were giving me about her head. Come to find out she was wearing her seatbelt. Then we find out he was going 70-plus miles an hour street racing somebody with a blood alcohol of 0.241, 19 years old, in our country legally, come over at age 16 in 2013 as an unaccompanied minor to work in the United States, and we allowed that. He was stopped at the border in Nogales, Arizona, and asked if he was deported back to his country of Honduras, if he feared for his life, in which he said no. But they still took him from Nogales to a sanctuary city in California and hooked him up with his illegal brother who lived in Tennessee. And then they moved to Omaha, Nebraska.
Okay, and that's where they...
He killed her.
Killed your daughter. Now, he had a record. He had been in trouble before.
He did.
And he still hadn't been deported.
Correct.
Was he ever deported?
No. Not that we could find out. And, of course, ICE at the time under the past administration wouldn't give us any information. So our senators, wonderful Senator Chuck Grassley in Iowa, and then Ben Sass in Nebraska, went and got this information for us.
Did you not? Oh, hang on a second. Did you even know he was an illegal immigrant when this first? Did you find
right
that
away.
Out later? You
right
knew right away because
the investigator, when he brought Sarah's belongings, told us.
Michelle, okay, I'm sorry. This is really sensitive, but the doctor tells you zero chance of survival. Was she still living when he said that?
No, no. They had already declared her brain dead as soon as they got her to the emergency room, because they had to do CPR on her to start her heart twice en route from L Street to University Hospital.
This is a tough question, and I'm only asking this because I lost my daughter in a different, very different way, but I wanted to see her, and I did, but she hadn't been in a horrible accident. Did you go see her?
Sarah was an organ donor, so we had her on life support, and we still needed to identify her. And I, at this time, do not know. All I know is the extent of her injuries, and they were all head traumas. So my ex-husband went in to identify her because I didn't want to see her.
Yeah. No, I understand that.
But however, there was not a mark to her face. God protected her face. It was all to the back of the head, because when he smashed into her, it took her back of her SUV up to the back of her front seat. She still looked beautiful, and I thank God for that.
Yeah, there's something about a need to see them.
Mm-hmm.
There is. There really is something about a need to see them.
And so I was, again, thankful that we had that opportunity, even though she was gone, to sit next to her for 3 days before her recipients of her organs could be brought into
that
place.
What a gift. I mean, honestly.
And I just met her heart recipient on July 29th. It was his birthday. And I tell you, it brought me comfort to know that her loving, giving heart is living on through someone else.
I totally get that. We donated Sasha's cornea, and I later, a few months later, got a card. I mean, I told you I was going to have trouble doing this. I got a card in the mail. Who we had donated to, and
it's special.
It really is. It's very gratifying because it's life, you know. It's life in the midst of, and I'll never forget at her funeral, I had my first grandson, and he filled his diaper in the middle of the funeral, which I'm just saying, God gives these things. All right, Michelle, look and listen to that timing. We're running out of time here, so 21, her life was gone, and you've gotten involved with Angel Moms. How has that been effective?
It's been very effective for me, you know, in talking about Sarah's therapy for me and to honor her and hearing other parents' stories. You know, you don't feel so alone,
and
you're
just
educating people.
Do people, we're almost out of time, you can hear the music. Do people treat you with respect, or do they hear your stories?
The majority of them do. Yeah. We still get the hateful ones, and you know what? It's not going to silence me. My daughter deserves to be heard.
Michelle Root, God bless you, Michelle.
God bless you.
It's hard to talk about it. You've got a lot of courage.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio.
Well, the last 2 years, we've just had tremendous response, early response to the announcement they were going to Israel on a Holy Land tour. We're going March of this year. We go March of every year. Last year, we filled up like early fall, and I expect us to fill up early fall this year as well. So if you're interested in this March 14th through the 22nd tour, and you'll be going with primarily supporters of AFA and AFR, just get the brochure and check it out. You can call us today at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your address, and we'll mail you a brochure. If you simply want to go online, all the information is there. It's at twholyland.com, twholyland.com. If you want to go in March, we're filling up, and we're filling up fast. So check it out, twholyland.com.
Here on American Family Radio, this is David Wolin with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Carefully manicured ivy may look amazing on an old estate, but when that stuff starts growing in your garden or up the sides of your trees where you don't want it, it's a bear to get rid of. You'll do whatever it takes to get rid of those invasive vines. And that's the attitude Jesus took toward the religious leaders in Israel, whose earn your way to God brand of holiness had put the people of Israel in a spiritual chokehold. And for this, Jesus openly rebuked the Pharisees, saying, "Every plant that my heavenly Father has not planted will be pulled up by the roots." But by contrast, when your life is rooted in Christ, His life flows into you. Drink deeply from God's Word daily with Anchor Devotional. Just visit getanchor.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior, and my major is psychology. I love Truett. Maybe a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
From our nation's capital comes word of a protester using a cell phone who was silenced by a Republican congressman. It happened during a hearing on conservative censorship and social media. The protester just would not be quiet. So Missouri Congressman Billy Long summed up his years as a professional auctioneer. And, well, folks, you just got to hear it for yourself.
What's she saying? I can't understand her. What?
What's she?
Officer, will you escort this young lady out, please?
Hit two and a half and down five. Yeah, but four. Four and a quarter, four and a half. We're selling the cell phone there. Four and a quarter, four and a half. Hit four and a half, 475, 505, 5 1/4, 5 1/2. I yield back.
Congressman Billy Long, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Both the press secretary and the president pushing back hard late this afternoon, Brett, on this anonymously authored op-ed in the New York Times. In a lengthy statement, we'll only read part of it, Sarah Huckabee Sanders saying, quote, "We are disappointed but not surprised that the paper chose to publish this pathetic, reckless, and selfish op-ed. This coward should do the right thing and resign." At a law enforcement officer event, sheriff's event, in the past hour, the president running down a long list of what he says are accomplishments that his administration has achieved over the past 16 or 18 months, and also saying that the New York Times publishing an anonymous op-ed was an absolutely gutless move.
Nobody has ever done in less than a two-year period what we've done. So when you tell me about some anonymous source within the administration, probably who's failing and probably here for all the wrong reasons.
The unidentified official says he is part of the resistance in the White House that believes the president continues to act in a manner that is detrimental to the health of our republic.
The author says he and other like-minded administration officials are working to insulate the government from what he calls the president's misguided impulses. Meetings with him veer off topic and off the rails. He engages in repetitive rants, and his impulsiveness results in half-baked, ill-informed, and occasionally reckless decisions that have to be walked back. The official says the resistance wants the Trump White House to succeed, but adds successes have come despite, not because of, the president's leadership style, which is impetuous, adversarial, petty, and ineffective.
That was John Roberts on Special Report last night, and that was a breaking story that I would love to talk to you about. We will just touch on it this morning. I would just say this, reading that entire piece, I was appalled last night. First of all, I think it's probably someone in national security, because I know from information that we know on the inside here that horrible people are in place in the national security apparatus, and it keeps happening. I haven't mentioned names to you lately, but trust me, it's a bad situation. So I sort of think that the traitor is in the national security apparatus, and the audacity of someone to write an op-ed like that and claim to be some sort of champion while undermining the President of the United States and the will of the people, it's just appalling. And before we get back to, by the way, we're live at Phoenix Park Hotel here in Washington at Hold Their Feet to the Fire, and my good friend Mark Kerkorian is sitting across from me. He is the Executive Director for the Center for Immigration Studies. Mark, because you and I work here in D.C., I have to ask you your opinion about this op-ed.
Yeah, I mean, it's not my area, but I don't even understand what the point of the op-ed was. In other words, what is the writer intending to accomplish? In other words, if he thinks that that's an important thing and he and other people are sort of trying to insulate the government from the president's craziness or whatever, why? What's the point of the op-ed? I mean, I think this is sort of showing off. It's advertising. It's moral print. It's boasting.
It's exactly. Boasting about something about which should not be boasted about.
Exactly.
And he goes on to talk about how John McCain is the model.
Yeah.
That's a whole other issue. So that tells me a whole lot about this person.
Yeah. Once I saw that, I was like, I see. Yeah, I see who that is.
That's exactly,
or what kind of person
that's
that is.
Exactly what I thought too, Mark.
Yeah.
It's like, now we see where you're coming from, and your judgment has already been disqualified because of that.
In my opinion, yes.
Yeah, well, we'll be talking more about that in the days to come. But today we're here to talk about the situation with immigration in the country, which is what you live and breathe. And let me just say that Center for Immigration Studies is a think tank. It's a think tank, and they deal with the facts, and they provide all of these. You okay? Your headset? Okay. We're trying to be subtle here. You okay? All right. All right. Center for Immigration Studies provides some of the most trustworthy studies in this town for Senate and House offices, for researchers. And so, Mark, let's talk. You know, so much has happened this past 15, 20 years? How long have we been fighting this?
Well, longer than that. I've been doing this 23 years now, and people were here before me, too. So, I mean, this has really been going on since we changed the immigration law in 1965. And when that was done...
That was Ted Kennedy, right?
This was Ted Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think Kennedy knew what was going to happen. No one knew. Everybody... It was almost an accident. It was... What they were trying to do is clean up an old part of the immigration law that had these national origins quotas, you know, a certain number of people from Germany and a certain number from Italy and this kind of stuff. They wanted to clean that up. Part of the civil rights movement. That's the way they saw it. That's fine. I was actually for that. What they didn't get was that they opened a Pandora's box that has now, you know, resulted in tens of millions of immigrants that nobody anticipated were going to be moving here who've come here.
You know, I first saw this with my own eyes and then understood. I don't know that I'd attribute that much as much innocence to them as you do, but
well, look, I yield to no one in my loathing of Ted Kennedy, but I don't think he knew what was going to happen.
Okay, well, I just remember when Bill Clinton was running for president and they filled Soldier Stadium in Chicago with people to swear in right before the election of all countries around the world, and it was pretty clear what they were up to, you know?
Yep.
And so... Mark, how do you see, are you encouraged at all? Where are we in this battle?
I mean, I'm encouraged, but I think people's expectations were too high when this administration came in. people, the image that I use is people thought this was going to be like the first Gulf War. Shock and awe. We were just going to roll over the other side and that was the end of it.
Yeah.
It's not. It's trench warfare.
Right.
And, you know, like 100 years ago in Belgium, you know, we're fighting for 6 feet of dirt.
It's true. Boy, that's very well said.
And I think in the end, we are going to prevail. But it's going to be messy and ugly and difficult in the process, and we need to keep with it, not say, well, you know, there's a setback here, so let's give up. Or not say, well, Jeff Sessions isn't doing everything we want right away, so let's get rid of him. Big mistake. We're going to be pushing on all kinds of fronts all the time in order to achieve small gains. And that's what we have to do. We have to keep it up because the other side is relentless.
Mark, I know the answer to this, but who's we?
We meaning everybody who's critical of a current immigration policy, which is to say, you know, the advocacy groups like Numbers USA and FAIR, think tank like my Center for Immigration Studies, as well as lots of citizens groups that deal with a lot of issues.
Talk radio hosts
as well.
And
exactly.
people who live in the country and are experiencing sea change. You know, I don't know if you saw this article a few days ago sent by, it's written by a guy that calls himself Spangler. I know you. I've interviewed him before. I can't think of his real name. Goldman?
David Goldman.
Goldman, yeah. So he wrote this really interesting article in response to John McCain's funeral. And basically he said that they are celebrating a world that never was. Something like his words are more eloquent. But in his article, when you get down to the nut of it, he says that he thinks the reason the resistance, the main reason, is not President Trump's personality, not his careless words, not his bluster, not his what they consider inarticulateness, but it's immigration. The nut of it is immigration. That's what they all oppose, is stopping any kind, whatever their reasons, whether it's business or more voters, they're all united, and he is the tip of the spear on this.
Yeah, I think that's probably true, and you're seeing that in Europe as well, for instance.
Yes, right.
And it's because the point to their promoting open immigration is that it changes the society. These guys don't really like America the way it is. Remember, what did President Obama say? Fundamentally transform the United States. Well, if you love your wife, you don't say, well, you know, we're going to get married and I'm going to fundamentally transform you. It's like, sorry, that's not the way it works.
It doesn't work out very well, does it?
It doesn't work out very well. And that's a sign that, frankly, much of our elite has become kind of disconnected from the interests of the American people. And they see themselves as having more in common with similar people in foreign countries than they do with their own countrymen. That's the core problem.
It's really true. And so when President Trump started standing up to European leaders in the EU, they were appalled because the French are our friends, you know, and they're our model. The French should be a model for anything.
I mean, or the Germans.
No offense,
aren't
you? Yeah. No, you're not French, you like France. I know you
sure,
like France.
Why not? Yeah.
Yeah, I do too. But seriously, or the Germans, absolutely.
Right.
They're running their countries into the ground. And so, but they're still, they have this romantic notion, you know, of Europe and France.
Yeah, and this is what Brexit was about, remember?
Yes.
It was the British elite. Yeah. And remember, one of Tony Blair, the previous prime minister, he's the one who kind of opened the door to high levels of immigration. One of his advisors actually went on the record and said, we did this on purpose in order to rub the noses of ordinary British people in diversity, so-called. In other words, they did it intentionally to change their societies. And that's exactly the same as some white nationalists saying we have to have immigration for our racial purposes. It's all racialist nonsense. And the point of immigration policy should be to promote the interests of everybody who's already here, American citizens. And that's not what our elite or the British elite or Germany or anywhere else sees the point of immigration. And what we're seeing is Brexit, President Trump, Italy now has the two parties, anti-immigration parties. They now run the country. Germany has a growing anti-immigration party, which, you know, they're not all Nazis, but they've got a background there.
Yeah, there's a bleed over. And in Britain, too, right? It's sort of like there's not Nazis, but white supremacists.
Sure.
So
and
it gets messy.
Right.
Because that's certainly not the drive of those of us that oppose it here. Because in America, the unique thing, I'm telling you something like you don't know. In America, of course, anyone can be an American.
Sure.
It's an embrace of ideals. It has nothing to do with color. And we celebrate that.
But how many people can you take a year
exactly.
to do that? You
yes.
know what I mean? I mean, I like food, but I eat too much of it, and I need to start eating less. And, I mean, in my book from 10 years ago, my editor took out the beginning from the introduction, so I always bring it up just to get back at her. Immigration is like donuts. When you're a 9-year-old, you can probably eat all the donuts you want. They're good for you. Our country, when we were young, we benefited from immigration a lot. Our country isn't 9 years old anymore. When you're like me and you're 57, you can't eat donuts. There's nothing wrong with the donuts.
They're
the same donuts. You have to eat fewer of them. Yeah. You know, so it's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's not that immigration is bad. It's certainly not that immigrants are bad. They're people. Some are good. Some are bad. They're like anybody else.
Exactly.
The question is, what is the effect on our country of different levels of immigration? That's the core question we need to get at.
Some of this we can see with our own eyes. I was talking with my husband about this, and he was saying, you know, when we were in school, weren't there like, okay, this is just a number out of the air, weren't there like 150 million Americans, you know, when we were growing up, and now there are like 300 and something?
Right. Yeah, probably 200 when you and I were growing
up. Okay.
150 was like in the early 50s, I think, or something.
Okay.
But anyway, yes. And now there's 320 million, I think, Americans now.
Do we have any way of knowing how much that is because of immigration?
Oh, sure. No, we do that kind of stuff. We do the research on that all the time. All the population growth that's happening now, or almost, not all of it, but almost all of it, is driven by immigration, 80%+. And, you know, the point is not that fewer people are good or more people are bad. I mean, that's kind of a tree-hugger sort of anti-human thing. My point is, why is the Congress of the United States deciding how many Americans there are? Why wouldn't American moms and dads be the ones who are deciding how many Americans there are going to be in the future? In other words, immigration is social engineering.
Yes, it is.
It's the government saying to the American people, you're not having enough kids, darn it. We're going to fix your broken decisions and import people who are better than you. That's the problem. It's not so much that we have a given population that's higher or lower or whatever. It's that the decision has been taken out of the hands of American moms and dads, and it's social engineering.
And the thing, you know, that op-ed, I'll go back to that in the New York Times. We talked about how whoever that is thinks he knows better about everything. So they're going to thwart. He actually said in the article they're thwarting what the president wants to do and ha, 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 going behind him, taking papers off his desk because, you know, they've got to control. And so it makes me think of immigration because that's what's happening with immigration. The president will make will announce and try to implement something, and then they undermine him. And it happens, I'm thinking that it happens in the Congress where the resistance movement is strong too, where right now the House of Representatives is refusing to fund a border wall, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably more in Congress on immigration than in the agencies because I don't know if you had Tom Homan on yet, who's the former head of ICE.
Not yet.
ICE is, you know, they're happy to do their jobs, you know what I mean? And likewise with what's called USCIS, which is the part of Homeland Security that does the green cards and the citizenship and everything.
Yeah.
They're run now by really top people who are making changes. What we're seeing, the thwarting of the president's agenda, is in Congress. Now, and you expect the Democrats to thwart his agenda. The problem is too many of the Republicans are thwarting his agenda. The House almost passed a really good bill by Congressman Goodlatte, exactly. Within 20 votes of passage, it was because of sort of weak-willed Republicans who resisted what the president wants that bill didn't pass.
Weak-willed is very kind.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. It's very politic.
I dare to be dull. I run a think tank.
You know, no, I think there's certainly the Speaker of the House right now hates this, and he is Mr. Resistance when it comes to immigration. But, you know, here's the 2018 midterms coming up, Mark.
Yep.
And according to polls, you tell me, Mr. Think Tanker, aren't American people kind of concerned about illegal immigration?
Yeah, sure they are. But, you know, there's obviously a lot of other issues that mix into that. And the question is, how do you successfully articulate that message to get people to politically respond?
And are you going to brag about your tax cuts?
Yeah, our House leadership is not, Republican leadership is not doing that. They're not, I mean, they could pass measures, standalone measures, that they could say, look, we passed this. The Democrats all voted against it. The Senate Democrats are stopping, but we passed it. In other words, they call it messaging bills, bills you know that aren't going to pass, and they're not doing it.
No, they're not doing it. So, 30 seconds, how do Americans respond? They're getting ready for the 2018 elections.
You need to, I mean, I'm not political, but if the Democrats take the House of Representatives, before they even impeach the president, I think they're going to vote to defund immigration enforcement, defund ICE.
Yeah, so hold your nose and vote. That's all we can say. Mark Kerkorian, Center for Immigration
Studies. A lying tongue hates its victims, and a flattering mouth works ruin. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. The incumbent Democrat governor of New York is being attacked from the left in the Democrat primary by actress Cynthia Nixon, similar to the way Bernie Sanders attacked Hillary Clinton in 2016. Things got rather testy in their primary debate, where Cuomo made things a little harder for himself. He asked Nixon to stop interrupting. She accused him of lying. He then responded that he would stop lying when she did. You kinda just admitted lying. Nixon, a left-leaning Bernie Sanders type who embraces all things regressive, and Cuomo, another regressive who admitted lying publicly. Oh, New York.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The FDA just signed a new contract to work with Planned Parenthood to get fresh tissue from aborted babies to create what they call humanized mice. That is, mice with a human immune system. They are cannibalizing unborn babies to get tissue from their livers and their thymuses so that little mice have a functioning immune system. Tissue from miscarriages won't work. It has to be tissue from a freshly killed baby. Using our tax dollars for this grotesque form of research is Nazi-esque, something that Joseph Mengele might do. The FDA excuses all this by saying it's a very small fraction of the research they do. Well, we wouldn't accept that excuse from Mengele, and we shouldn't accept it today. Instead of humanized mice, how about some humanized researchers instead?
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Len Ingram of Redeem Clean felt God call him to support the American Family Association.
I'm a laundryman. I'm the son of a laundryman, too. I love clean clothes. I love the business. I love everything about it. This project was built exclusively to support AFA and AFR. There's no strings attached. Another thing that I would like to see come out of this is that I would like to see other business people feel a calling to support ministries, wherever and whatever they do to share the gospel of Jesus Christ.
In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean Laundry Detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and get Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Ex-FBI agent Peter Strzok is the poster boy for the deep state with his contemptuous congressional testimony and his naked hostility toward our elected president. Evidently, there are many others like him in a resistance within the Trump administration today. Strzok also personifies the sorry state of our nation's capabilities to defeat those working to subvert our security, especially here. For example, he seems to have done nothing when, as the FBI's top counterintelligence official, he learned that the Chinese were reading all of then-Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's emails. Strzok's inaction may have contributed to a huge success for Chinese counterintelligence, which liquidated large numbers of our spies in China. Investigating this scandal and vastly improving our ability to defend our constitutional republic against all enemies, foreign and domestic, must be job one for congressional oversight and the Trump team alike. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Immigration is the fault and all of the problems that we're having because we cannot get them to sign legislation. We cannot get them even to the negotiating table. And I say it's very strongly the Democrats' fault. They're obstruction. They're really obstructionist, and they are obstructing. The United States will not be a migrant camp, and it will not be a refugee holding facility. Won't be. You look at what's happening in Europe, you look at what's happening in other places, we can't allow that to happen to the United States, not on my watch. For the rest of the world, you look at everything that's taking place, pick up your newspapers this morning, and you see. We want safety and we want security for our country. If the Democrats would sit down instead of obstructing, we could have something done very quickly. Good for the children, good for the country, good for the world. It could take place quickly. We could have an immigration bill. We could have child separation. We're stuck with these horrible laws. They're horrible laws. What's happening is so sad. Is so sad. And it can be taken care of quickly, beautifully, and we'll have safety. This could really be something very special. It could be something maybe even for the world to watch, just like they're watching our great economy, how it's soaring. They could watch this.
That's interesting, isn't it? That's President Trump speaking. It's not in the last few days, but speaking on the topic he's spoken about since he was running for election. And what that reminds me of is that the member of the resistance is in the White House making sure they stop him from doing these horrible, no good things. And you listen to him there, and what he says resonates with the American people, and it makes me even more angry that people around him are undermining the things he's trying to do. Tom Holman is my guest. He is the former director of ICE, which is the chief in-country law enforcement. They're not on the border. They're in-country, going into sanctuary cities, doing a lot of dangerous work. And, of course, it's ICE that the left wants to abolish. And so, Tom, thanks for joining me.
No, thanks for having me.
All right, so how long were you a director of ICE?
I was director of ICE for a year and a half. I've been enforcing immigration law for just under 35 years.
So doing what? Were you an ICE? What was your past?
Well, I started as a Border Patrol agent in 1984, so I worked the front line as a Border Patrol agent. Then I became a special agent, then I climbed the ranks, special agent up to the leadership. And I retired in January 2017. At least I thought I retired. The day I retired, I got a call from General Kelly. Asked me if I would stay and run the agency at the request of the president. So I did. So I've said many times, not the smartest guy to sit in this chair as a director, but I'm a patriot. When the president asked me to stay and run the agency for a while, I did, and I stayed for a year and a half, and watched it get turned back on under this president.
I don't even know where to start. I guess one thing, just to help us understand, I already described that, sort of, that you guys enforce the law within the country, the immigration laws that exist. You're the ones that...
The one thing you don't hear, though, we enforce immigration law. We look for those who are in the country illegally, and we seek them out. We arrest them, detain them, and remove them once they get a removal order from an immigration judge. The misnomers out there is that ICE doesn't prioritize, like we did under the prior administration, criminal aliens. That is wrong. As the left, again, intentional mismessaging, 89% of everybody ICE arrested the first year under this president had a criminal history. It means they had a criminal conviction or they were pending criminal charges. We found them in a jail. 9 out of 10 is pretty good prioritization. Under this president, when he brought me back to be the director, our detainers increased 87%. Our arrested.
87? Wait, sit there for a second. That's a lot.
Yep.
You're detained because you guys felt... I'm sure you felt like, okay, let's just contrast. People trying to come here illegally knew there had been a big sea change, and they stopped coming. And you and ICE officers felt that they finally had someone who had their back. So then you started being able to do your job.
Detainers went up 87% because under the last administration, you couldn't put a detainer on an illegal alien, even though he was sitting in a county jail, unless he was convicted of the crime he was arrested for. This president says, no, they're in the country illegally in violation of law, you will enforce the law, which we should have been doing all along. So, of course, the detainers went way up, like over 80%, 87%, and our arrests were up nearly 40%. Arrests of MS-13 gang members almost tripled. Worksite enforcement tripled. I mean, this president let the men and women of ICE and the Border Patrol, who I love, I started my career with them, again, 40,000 American patriots right there, he let us do our job. I mean, it wasn't magical. He didn't invent nothing. In all the executive orders, he could have wrote in one sentence, you will now enforce the laws that were enacted by Congress, and you will now uphold the oath you took when you took your oath. So this president allowed us to do our job. And because of that, the first year under President Trump's presidency and leadership, illegal immigration dropped to a 45-year low across the southwest border. That's not a coincidence. That's because we have a president that believes in the rule of law and believes in letting law enforcement officers do their job.
Yeah, but of course then the court stepped in and sort of put a kink in everything he was doing every time he issued an order. And I think, you know, the word got out in Central America and South America, and so the borders have been flooded again. But let's talk about ICE specifically, because it is unbelievable the attacks on this law enforcement agency. I think of, well, you think that Seattle was the at least the bottom so far, you know, that the ICE headquarters there when the street protesters took over the street.
Well, that was Portland.
Portland.
And they took down an American flag and hung up an Antifa flag. But the men and women that work for me, again, American heroes, I love every one of them. We took that building back, and we put the American flag back up there. And that Antifa flag now belongs to the brave agent that climbed that flagpole and took it down. They offered to send it to me. I said, no, you climb that ladder. You're a hero. You keep it. But whether it's Portland, whether it's San Francisco, whether it's Chicago, look, the governor of New York, I'm a native New Yorker. I started my law enforcement career as a cop in New York. My father was a cop in New York. My grandfather was a cop in New York. And we got the governor of New York last week called ICE agents thugs. And that he's going to prosecute them. We actually arrest thugs. I'd like to remind Governor Cuomo that we actually arrested hundreds of MS-13 members in his state. We've arrested 5,000 criminal aliens off the streets of New York that many walked out of his sanctuary jails. I spent millions of dollars on the northern border working with state and local law enforcement to fight the opioid crisis and the child pornography crisis. So ICE agents actually did a lot for the state of New York, so I would think he sent a thank you letter rather than calling them names. And it's like the end thing now from the far left, Ocasio-Cortez, they want to abolish ICE. But what they don't share with American people, ICE does more than immigration. Immigration is important, and we're not going to be bullied and not doing it. But ICE also does gun trafficking investigations, narcotics investigations, child pornography investigations, child predator investigations. We've rescued over 1,000 children from predators this past year. We've arrested and put in prison over 2,000 child predators. We do intellectual property rights. We stop technology being smuggled out of this country to countries like missile technology that could kill our war fighters. The men and women of ICE do national security work, criminal investigative work. Immigration is a piece of it. But you never hear them talking about that. But, you know, to abolish ICE means open borders. Bottom line, if ICE isn't here, you get by the Border Patrol, you're home free. No one's looking for you. Even if you get arrested by the Border Patrol and asked to see a judge and you get released because some judge said you can't detain them more than 20 days, no one's looking for you, home free. You can overstay a visa, no one's looking for you, home free. So the President Trump, who I think is an amazing president, I've worked for 6 presidents, starting with Ronald Reagan. I respect them all because I respect the office of the president. But no one's done more for border security, law enforcement, and public safety than Donald Trump. That's just a stone cold fact. But you won't hear the far left talk about all those things. They want to vilify the men and women.
That's exactly why you're vilified. That's exactly why you're vilified. That's why they hate him. You know, I was just talking before you joined me about that letter by the person in the resistance inside the White House that was printed in the New York Times yesterday. And we were discussing the fact that really the tip of the spear here is the reason they hate this president so much really is immigration. That is like the thing that offends them the most. And that's why they hate you the most. I want to talk just for a second the things that the left has done to vilify ICE. You glossed over Portland because it's a familiar story to you, but I don't know that everybody is that familiar, Tom. It was Antifa who tried to invade your building, right? Yeah. And the local police wouldn't protect you. Is that right?
The Portland mayor, he has his own issues. He instructed his chief of police and the police department, they weren't to assist ICE in any way whatsoever. Now, these people blocked our building. They threatened our employees. And look, you know, I got some career law enforcement officers that won't be bullied, and they get threatened every day, and they can deal with it, even though it's inappropriate and it's very unnecessary. These men and women carry badges and guns, and they're used to that type of stuff. But a lot of employees in that building aren't officers. They're secretaries, they're management assistants, they're lawyers, they're budget analysts. And they're being threatened. Their lives and safety, they're being followed home. And they weren't allowed to leave the building. And they got harassed leaving the building. They do damage to their cars. I'd like to remind the mayor of Portland that they may be federal employees, but they're also taxpayers in the city of Portland that expects the police department to protect them. We closed the building down just out of abundance of caution for our employees. A couple days later, we worked with Federal Protective Service and took the building back with our law enforcement, our agents, and our officers. We took the building back. And over time, we were bringing employees back. But it's very unfortunate that the mayor of Portland would not allow law enforcement to help law enforcement. His number one duty as a mayor is to protect the citizens of Portland, and ICE officers and ICE employees are also citizens of Portland.
Yes, absolutely. And, of course, that is a great example of what sanctuary city status does to you guys in general when you're trying to – it's protecting criminals and making you the enemy. It's the whole world turned upside down. Also, I know, is it Antifa or some entity – we started putting your names and addresses and personal information on the web so people could come, you know, and encouraging people to come after you.
Well, look, it's unfortunate. There's a lot of terrible things said about me on the internet and on social media. My public affairs officer told me never get on social media because I feel ashamed. But, you know, I'm not a Nazi. I'm not a racist. I'm a law enforcement officer. That's the men and women of ICE like me. I spent their lives committed to enforcing the laws that were enacted by Congress. We're not making this up. These laws are on the books. And to vilify the men and women, call them racist and Nazi simply for doing their jobs, it's just wrong. I mean, if you don't like what ICE does, then talk to your senator or congressman and tell them to change the law. We're simply enforcing the law. I've testified in Congress, and I've lit up Democratic congressman from California while I was sitting at the table starting to talk about anti-immigrant, races, and just vilifying the three law enforcement officers at the table, and I won't let it go. And I lit her up afterwards. I said, "How dare you look down here and call any of us anti-immigrant? None of us are anti-immigrant. We're anti-illegal alien, but we have immigrants that came to this country the right way, and we respect them. They're great members of society. But if you don't like what I do, you need to look in the mirror because you enacted those laws I'm enforcing. So shame on you. You pass a law, you give me money to enforce the law." Then you badmouth us for doing it. So I would say to these members of Congress, look in the mirror. Family separation, huge issue, right? Everybody hated it. There wouldn't be family separation. A year and a half ago, I was up on Hill numerous times with leadership of CBP to talk about closing a loophole for families. Let us detain families in a family setting, in a family dorm, for more than 20 days until they'll see a judge. That way, they're guaranteed they see a judge. That's what they want, right? They want to see a judge and make the fear finding. But those on the far left don't want to fix that loophole because they know most of them, up to 88%, will lose their cases and have to be removed. They don't want them leaving. So I truly believe, my 34 years of experience, I've done a lot of work up on Hill, they don't want to fix the loopholes because they don't want this president to have a win. They want this president to fail. And I hate that, as an American, as somebody that the America I grew up in, people respected law enforcement. The America I grew up in, people respected the office of the president. The America I grew up in, people didn't kneel for the national anthem. The America I grew up in, the president's success is the nation's success. So this is people putting their political ambitions, their political hatred toward this president in front of public safety and national security. That's just fact.
Tom, you're a patriot, and it's a pleasure to meet you, and God bless you for your service.
Thank you.
You know that so many of us just appreciate it so much.
Well, I want you listeners to know I may have retired after 35 years because I finally put my family in the front seat. I've been sitting in the back seat 34 years. But the last message I sent to my employees, I may be retiring from this office, but I'm not retiring from the fight. That's why I'm up here speaking as much as I can about the truth.
Yeah. Well, thank you for doing that, and thank you for joining us.
All right, thank you.
Tom Holman, former director of ICE, a real privilege. This has been Sandy Rios, live from the Phoenix Park Hotel in Washington. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.